Welcome to the Oldie Podcast. This is from our literary lunch featuring guest speakers and kindly sponsored by Noble Caledonia, specialists in worldwide small ship cruising. Our lunches are held monthly. Details and how to book can be found in our magazine and on the website www.theoldie.co.uk.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you so much for coming to the Oldie Lunch today. My name is Harry Mount, editor of the greatest magazine in the universe, The Oldie. And we are only here thanks to the extreme kindness of our sponsors, Noble Caledonia, who do wonderful cruises on crucially very small ships. I've been on one, it's fantastic. Our next speaker, he is a distinguished writer and television director and a best-selling historian. Rick Stroud has written Kidnap in Crete, the true story of the abduction of a Nazi general, famously by Patrick Leigh Fermor. Lonely Courage, about the women of SOE. And his latest book is I'm Not Afraid of Looking into the Rifles, Women of the Resistance in World War I. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Stroud.
Thank you very much. When I arrived here today, I got even more confused than I normally am, because they had on the table this book, which is the last book I wrote, Lonely Courage, which is about women of the SOE, the Special Operations Executive, and the book I thought I was going to write about is this one, which is I'm Not Afraid of Looking into the Rifles. They're both about very, very brave women, and there is a sort of link to them, which is that this book is dedicated to my daughter, Nell, who died of cancer. And she was a very, very, very brave woman, and she ran a circus. And I'm Not Afraid of Looking into the Rifles was sold to Simon & Schuster by a sad coincidence on her what would have been her 47th birthday. But by then she'd left us, and it's always meant rather a lot to me. And I've really enjoyed and found a lot of personal satisfaction trying to write about brave women. And it started when I was quite young, at about 10, and I read in the Eagle comic about Violette Szabo. There was a sort of strip about her, and she was another very brave woman. And when I finished writing Lonely Courage, I thought, well, who can I write about now? And I had no idea. And then a friend of mine, who was a journalist, she and I had done an event in Berlin. She sent me by complete chance a press cutting from a New York newspaper, from an American newspaper, about a woman called Gabrielle Petty. And I'd never heard of Gabrielle Petty. And Gabrielle was a woman who'd worked in the... who was Belgian. She was very young, and she'd had a very rough upbringing. But she became one of our most important... agents there. And so I thought, well, I've never heard of her. I wonder who else there is. And I then went on and I found, well, one of the agents, not really an agent, but somebody who operated in Belgium at that time, was somebody you've probably all heard of, which is Edith Cavell. And there's that beautiful statue in just off Trafalgar Square, which whenever I pass it, I feel impelled to go and touch it in memory of Edith. So I thought, well, maybe there's stuff here that will be a corollary to Lonely Courage. And I began to research it. And I found that there were more women who'd been completely forgotten, who had behaved with incredible courage and without even the training that the women in the SOE had had. These were just ordinary people. And as you know, there was the murder of the Prince Franz Josef in Sarajevo, which led, for reasons which I've never understood, to the First World War. It's very complicated, and I just can't work out how that happened. But that started, that was the trigger for the First World War to begin, and the Germans said, right, we are frightened that this is a complete lie, by the way, we're frightened that the French are going to invade us, and so we are going to invade France to stop this happening, and we're going to cross Belgium. Will that be all right? And they said, no, probably won't be all right. Please don't cross Belgium. And an American diplomat said, my God, he said, if they do that, he said, poor Belgium, They have no idea. The steamroller will just flatten them. And of course, that's exactly what happened. The steamroller of the German army, something like 400,000 well-armed, well-trained troops facing the Belgian army, which was okay, but it wasn't up to that. And they behaved appallingly as they smashed their way through Belgium in order to get to France. They did all the stuff that we know about. You know, they burnt villages, they burnt towns, they burnt the library in Louvain, which is a medieval library. They did things that since then people said, well, that can't be true. It's just propaganda. But they did nail babies to walls and do the most ghastly things of the sort of which we are presently hearing about in Gaza. And the ordinary people of Belgium, particularly at this point, the people who were on the what would become the, just behind the front line on the French and Belgian border, thought, well, what can we do? And the army went sweeping over them, and the British army tried to stop them and failed and was pushed back and pushed back to the Marne, where at last they were stopped, and that led to the trench system. But by this, which went, you know, right across France to the North Sea. But by this time, a lot of British and Allied soldiers had been marooned behind what had become enemy lines. And they were sometimes armed, sometimes not armed. They weren't led, and they didn't know what to do. And a marvellous woman called the Princess Marie de Croix, that is not how you pronounce her name, but it's too complicated. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Decided that she would try and help, and she lived in a chateau, and the chateau had a secret room in it, and she began to sort of think, she thought, well, I'll set it up as a hospital, maybe. At the same time, other people near her were finding these Allied soldiers who were now trying to eke out their livings in forests, and they began slowly to get them together and take them in groups to the princess's chateau, where she looked after them and began to wonder what on earth they were going to do about them. In the meantime, two Allied soldiers had been taken, who had been wounded, to Brussels, to Edith Cavell's hospital, which is a teaching hospital that she'd set up, which had set a new standard for nursing. And you must remember that at that time, nursing was not a very sort of glamorous or glorious profession, probably still isn't, but it was, in some areas, thought of as being just a one step above being a prostitute. Anyway, Edith was a very, very seriously, deeply moral person, took these two people, and she found a way to get them to Holland. And that was the beginning of a route that took marooned Allied soldiers from the princess's chateau to Brussels and on. And it was a very, very dangerous thing. And the soldiers, Edith would say to the soldiers, please be careful, there are Germans everywhere. This is an occupied town. She sometimes found soldiers dancing in the street singing British songs. And that was quite a difficult thing to deal with. And eventually, of course, it all went wrong. And another thing was that the Princess de Croix, when the Germans came to search her chateau, would put the soldiers into her secret room, which was quite a tense thing. And once the Germans came, they searched the house, the soldiers were hidden, the soldiers eventually came out. And she said, see, look, I've saved your lives, but you won't give us women the vote. Which I think was a very, very good point that she made. Anyway, eventually they were all arrested. And as you probably know, Edith was famously tried. The trial was a complete joke. It took place in German, which she couldn't speak. She could speak French. She was made to sign documents that she had no idea what she was signing. And she spent her last hours in a cell on her own reading the Imitations of Christ by St. Thomas a Kempis. And she said to the end of her days, and she, patriotism is not enough, and I must have no hatred or bitterness for anyone. And the next day, they took her out and shot her. And that was a propaganda sort of disaster for the Germans. Later on, Gabrielle Petty, who sort of takes over, had a very rough life. She became our most important agent in France and Belgium. And she, aged 23, was eventually captured. And this was a complete disaster. And she had a joke trial. And she was, at the sort of eve of her death, was asked, do you want a blindfold? And she said, I'm going to show you Germans that a Belgian woman knows how to die. I'm not afraid of looking into the rifles. And that gave me the title of the book. And she was shot the next day. She was buried in an unmarked grave after the war. She was disinterred and had a state funeral. She is forgotten. And I hope that my book will bring her, to some extent, back to life. And God has sent me a very wonderful thing, because I wanted to go on writing about women like this. And I'd come across years ago a woman called Madeleine Riefaut in France, who was a French resistance worker. She, aged 19, had gone up to a German soldier on the bridge Pont Solferino in Paris and shot him in the head. She'd been captured, tortured, escaped. She then led this assault on the Hermann Göring redoubt in Paris as the Allies were entering the city. She became a radical journalist and a war correspondent. She worked in Algeria and Vietnam. She became Ho Chi Minh's honorary goddaughter. And I want to write. Nobody's heard of her. I bet nobody in this room has heard of her. I want to write. I've now got the contract to write that book, and I hope that I can bring Madeleine along with these other women. And she's still alive. She's blind. She's paranoid. She's living in Paris, but she led an exemplary life. She always did what she thought was morally right, and the book is called Fighting in the Light, because that's what she said after she was released from her Gestapo prison. She said, "It's such a wonderful thing to be fighting in the light at last after being working in the occupied country." And I'm going to finish by reading actually a poem from Lonely Courage, which isn't actually about anything, any of them. It's an agent's cryptographical equipment. She used the poem to make code messages to send to England. But for me, it sort of sums up what these women were and what they sacrificed and what they did, and what I've tried to write about in my books. And that'll be the end of it when I say this. But the poem goes, "The life that I have is all that I have. And the life that I have is yours. The love that I have of the life that I have is yours and yours and yours. A sleep I shall have, a rest I shall have, yet death will be but a pause. For the peace of my years in the long green grass will be yours and yours and yours." Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Rick, for an extremely moving speech.
You have been listening to The Oldie Podcast. Please share this episode. Look out for The Oldie Magazine subscription offer on our website, www.theoldie.co.uk. Thank you and good luck.